ओम अज्ञान्ति बिनन्दस्य ज्ञानांजलाय शलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवी गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। सो 15 चैप्टर 18 वर्स। यस्मात् शरम अतीतोऽहम् अक्षरद् अपिचोत्तम अतोऽस्मि लोके निर्वेच प्रतिह पुरुषोत्तम। Because I am transcendental beyond both the fallible and infallible, and because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in the Vedas as that Supreme Person. No one can surpass the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, neither the conditioned soul nor the liberated soul. He is therefore the greatest of personalities. Now it is clear here that the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are individuals. The difference is that the living entities, either in conditioned state or in the liberated state, cannot surpass in quantity the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is incorrect to think that the Supreme Lord and living entities as being on the same level or equal in all respects. There is always the question of superiority and inferiority between their personalities. The word Uttama is very significant. No one can surpass the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word Loke signifies in the Paurusha Agama, the Smriti scriptures. As confirmed in the Nirukta dictionary, Lokyatta Vedarton Nena. The purpose of the Veda is explained by the Smriti scriptures. The Supreme Lord is a localized aspect of Paramatma is also described in the Vedas themselves. The following verse appears in the Vedas, Chandogya Upanishad 12.3. Tavad Esha Samprasado Smach Sharirat Samuthaya Param Jyoti Rupam Sampadya Svena Rupe Abhinni Spadyate Sa Uttama Purusha. The super soul coming out of the body enters the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. Then in his form he remains in his spiritual identity. That supreme is called the Supreme Personality. This means that the Supreme Personality is exhibiting and diffusing his spiritual effulgence, which is ultimate illumination. That Supreme Personality also has a localized aspect as Paramatma. By incarnating himself as the son of Satyavati and Parasar, he explains the Vedic knowledge as Vyasadeva. Any question or comment? Okay, next. Yeah, Chintamani Mataji and Prabhuji, you can take turns to read.
Prabhuji, I had a wishing that super soul coming out of the body enters the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. Then in his form he remains in his personal spiritual identity. That supreme is called the Supreme Personality. Now that means the super soul is entering the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. I think the super soul is above that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just the different aspects of different aspects of the Supreme Personality. That is what the meaning here, you know, is like that. So the Supreme Personality is expanding himself, diffusing himself in the form of spiritual effulgence, which is Brahma Jyoti. And at the same time, he's also expanding in the form of Paramatma. So Paramatma is superior to Brahman. So basically these are various aspects of the Supreme Personality. Mm-hmm. Because when the body is not there, then what will happen? You don't have the super soul, right? So it's like you merge in Brahman or you go back to Godhead. So in that sense, it is mentioned like that because the Paramatma feature and the Brahman feature, they are also one and the same. To one degree, it is like, you know, they are all the same, Bhagwan, Paramatma and Brahman, because Achintya Bhedabhed Tattva, so one and different. When you don't have the body, then the soul will either merge in the Brahman or it will go back to Godhead. So in that sense, when the body is not there, the super soul comes out and basically enters the Brahman, you know, Brahman, because that is what is going to be existing, because Paramatma feature is only relevant for the material world, as we have discussed
earlier. He doesn't merge with Chiradakshaya Vishnu.
See, actually, as long as the creation is there, Chiradakshaya Vishnu will be there. And as soon as the creation is not there, that aspect of Supreme, because see, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is present in each and every universe, okay? At the end of Brahma's day, at the end of Brahma's life, Brahma is also going to die. So basically, they will all merge in the body of Mahavishnu.
Yeah.
So the entire thing goes into Mahavishnu and then everything is again created. So annihilation and creation, these are eternal things. And that's why there is a temporary, it's a temporary thing. The material creation is temporary. But the temporary aspect of...
Why should the super soul go to the Brahma Jyoti? Because Brahma Jyoti is
because the super soul's role is over, no? If we have discussed in one particular, if you remember, I think you were not there for the class, and you had messaged me that
I heard the lecture,
right? So you had asked me that. You had just mentioned that you heard about it and it was a nice concept or something, and you commented.
Yes.
So Rajiv Prabhu had asked a question about that. Is the super soul present in Brahma and Shiva and Vishnu?
Yeah.
So then we had discussed all these things, and finally we came to this conclusion that super soul is actually, there is a role of the super soul, and as long as we are in the body, as long as the creation is there. If the creation is not there, where is the question of Chiradakshaya Vishnu? There is no question of Chiradakshaya Vishnu. There is no question of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. They both merge into Mahavishnu.
Right? Yeah.
So then there is a super soul, because super soul is Paramatma. So basically what happens, as I said, that as long as, if the body is not there, then the super soul is going to merge back into,
Mahavishnu
or the Brahman effulgence, because Mahavishnu's role is basically creation. It is, the main role is creation. And he's an eternal form. He has an eternal existence. And from him, whenever there is creation and annihilation, that time, the super soul, Garbhodakshaya and Shivodakshaya. See, actually Mahavishnu is incarnation of Sankarshan. Right? We know that.
Then
Vasudeva Sankarshan, Pradyumna is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and Aniruddha is Chiradakshaya Vishnu. Yeah. So basically, they are there. So this Pradyumna and Aniruddha in the material world, they are called as Garbho and Shiro. And so they will, when the creation is not there, that means no material world is there. Only Mahavishnu is there, and then the Vaikuntha plants are there, and the Brahman is there. So super soul,
they will go to the Chaturvya form.
Yeah, they will go merge into the Chaturvya expansion. And they are there in the spiritual world, the Vaikuntha planet.
Yes.
So as far as I understand from this statement, is basically the super soul actually merges in the Brahman, means diffusion, because there is no use of super soul, after we leave the body. This Paramatma feature is actually realizing that the Supreme Lord is the controller in the material world. So that is Paramatma feature. But if you come out of the material world, you go beyond the material world, then you enter into a transcendental realm, which is the Brahman effulgence or Vaikuntha planets, which is back to Godhead or spiritual effulgence. So in that, I think in that connection, probably it's mentioned like this, that the super soul coming out of the body enters the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. Because if the body is not there, what is the role of super soul? It's a common sense.
I get it. Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. So obviously we know that another important role of super soul or Chiradakshaya Vishnu is that all the avatars are coming from Sri Narasimha Vishnu.
Yeah.
See, actually,
yeah.
In one sense, the incarnation of Narasimha, Rama, they are all superior to Sri Narasimha Vishnu, because Sri Narasimha Vishnu is actually the Purusha avatar. As you know, whereas Lord Rama and Narasimha, they are actually even superior to Vaikuntha Vishnu Narayan form, you know, because these Sankarshan Pradyumaniruddha, their expansion is Mahavishnu, Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu and Shivak Sai Vishnu. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But this, what Pradyumna Aniruddha Sankarshan was talking about, it is actually the second quadruple expansion. So they are not belonging to the first quadruple expansion. They are actually associates of Narayan in Vaikuntha. From them, Sankarshan, Mahasankarshan, also called as, you know, Sankarshan, second Sankarshan called as Mahasankarshan, his expansion is Mahavishnu. And then Pradyumaniruddha, they are actually also in the Vaikuntha planet, not in the Dwarka. Okay. So
yes.
Actually, considering that, because the abode of Lord Ramchandra is superior to Narayan, and the abode of Narasimhadeva, I think it should be superior to Narayan also, because Narasimha is actually the, see, there are three best incarnations, the ultimate forms of the Lord are three: Narasimha, Rama and Krishna. And amongst the three, Krishna is the ultimate, the most ultimate. Okay. Ultimate, more ultimate, most ultimate, like that, you know, in that sense. So Narasimha's leelas are, you know, more, you know, they are more importance than Narayan, you know, Narayan Vaikuntha, in Vaikuntha, and then Rama's incarnation, or, you know, the personality of Lord Ramchandra is superior to Narasimha, and Krishna is superior to Rama. So in that sense, so this super soul is, you know, the super soul incarnations are basically the Leela Avatar. All they have, like, avatars coming from the Shirodakshai Vishnu. But we know from the Acharya's revelation that Shirodakshai Vishnu is just a agent. You know, although Krishna is also coming from Shirodakshai Vishnu, but he is just an agent, because they all appear themselves. And as we know that when Krishna is appearing, then all the Vishnu Tattvas, they are entering the body of Krishna. Right? So he is the source of everything. So similarly, Lord Ramchandra's incarnation is also superior to Narayan form of the Lord. So when Ram is coming, all the all avatars, you know, below Ramchandra, they all merge into him. They are all in him, within him. He does not include Krishna's form. Okay, but Krishna's form includes Rama's also. So like that. So yeah, so this is how, you know, we can actually, I mean, this is how I understand basically. That finally the super soul merges, because the super soul is also Paramatma aspect of the, you know, Bhagavan feature, super Paramatma feature and this Brahman feature. There are three features of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And once there is no use of super soul in the material world, I mean, you know, the soul is liberated, then either way, the soul will merge in Brahma or it will go back to God. And so there is no question of super soul. So super soul will, like, you know, you can say that diffuse. Okay.
I read.
Huh?
19. I'll read.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, sure, yeah.
Text 19. Yoga mevam asamurro janaki purushottamam sa sarva vid bhajati man sarva bhavena bharata. Translation. Whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without doubting, is the knower of everything. He therefore engages himself in full devotional service to me, O son of Bharata. Perfect. There are many philosophical speculations about the constitutional position of the living entity and the Supreme Absolute Truth. Now, in this verse, the Supreme Personality of Godhead clearly explains that anyone who knows Lord Krishna to be the Supreme Person is actually the knower of everything. The imperfect knower goes on simply speculating about the absolute truth. But the perfect knower, without wasting his valuable time, engages directly in Krishna consciousness, the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. Throughout the whole of Bhagavad Gita, this fact is being stressed at every step. And since there are so many stubborn commentators of Bhagavad Gita who consider the supreme absolute truth and the living entities to be one and the same, Vedic knowledge is called shruti, learning by oral reception. One should actually receive the Vedic knowledge from authorities like Krishna and his representatives. Here Krishna distinguishes everything very nicely, and one should hear from this source. Simply to hear like the hog is not sufficient. One must be able to understand from the authorities. It is not that one should simply speculate academically. One should submissively hear from Bhagavad Gita that these living entities are always subordinate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyone who is able to understand this, according to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna knows the purpose of the Vedas. No one else knows the purpose of the Vedas. The word bhajati is very significant. In many places, the word bhajati is expressed in relationship with the service of the Supreme Lord. If a person is engaged in full Krishna consciousness, in the devotional service of the Lord, it is to be understood that he has understood all the Vedic knowledge. In the Vaishnava Parampara, it is said that if one is engaged in the devotional service of Krishna, then there is no need for any other spiritual process for understanding the Supreme Absolute Truth. He has already come to the point because he is engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. He has ended all preliminary processes of understanding. But if anyone after speculating for hundreds of thousands of lives does not come to the point that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that one has to surrender there, all his speculation for so many years and life is a useless waste of time. Hare Krishna.
Okay, any question? Okay, you're next.
Hare Krishna, text number 20. Iti guhasamam satram idam uktam varayanga isad buddhava buddhiman krita kritayasya bharata. This is the most confidential part of the Vedic scriptures, O sinless one, and it is disclosed now by me. Whoever understands this will become wise, and his endeavors will know perfection. Therefore, the Lord clearly explains here that this is the substance of all revealed scriptures, and one should understand this as is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus one will become intelligent and perfect in transcendental knowledge. In other words, to understanding the this philosophy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engaging in his transcendental service, everyone can become free from all contaminations of the modes of material nature. Devotional service is a process of spiritual understanding. Whenever devotional service exists, the material contamination cannot coexist. Devotional service to the Lord and the Lord himself are one and the same because they are spiritual. Devotional service takes place with the internal energy of the Supreme Lord. The Lord is said to be the sun, and ignorance is called darkness. Where the sun is present, there is no question of darkness. Therefore, whenever devotional service is present under the proper guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, there is no question of ignorance. everyone must take this consciousness of Krishna and engage in devotional service to become intelligent and purified. Unless one comes to this position of understanding Krishna and engages in devotional service, however intelligent he may be in the estimation of some common man, he is not perfectly intelligent. The word anaga by which Arjuna is addressed is significant. Anaga, O sinless one, means that unless one is free from all sinful reactions, it is very difficult to understand Krishna. One has to become free from all contamination, all sinful activity, then he can understand. But devotional service is so pure and potent that once one is engaged in devotional service, he automatically comes to the stage of sinlessness. While one is performing devotional service in the association of pure devotees with full Krishna consciousness, there are certain things which require to be vanquished altogether. The most important thing one has to surmount is weakness of the heart. The first fall down is caused by the desire to lord it over material nature. Thus one gives of the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Lord. The second weakness of the heart is that as one increases the propensity to lord it over material nature, he becomes attached to matter and the possession of matter. The problems of material existence are due to the weakness of the heart. In this chapter, the first 5 verses describe the process of freeing oneself from these weaknesses of heart, and the rest of the chapter from the 6th verse to the end discusses Osottama Yoga. Thus end the Bhagavad Bhakti Vedanta purport to the 15th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of Purushottam Yoga, the Yoga of the Supreme Person.
Any question? Any question here?
Yeah.
Okay. Can a sinful person become a devotee of Krishna?
Can a sinful person become a devotee of Krishna? Yeah.
Okay. Can a sinful person become a pure devotee of Krishna?
Yeah, even a sinful person, he will undergo transformation of heart. And gradually we can become a pure devotee.
So provided the devotee is following the instructions given by the Guru Parampara.
Yeah, that is it. Provided he is following Guru Sadhu Shastra and...
So see, actually, it's so sinful generally, you know, here it will sound that sinful something has to do with the regulative, breaking of regulative principles, or generally one will think of smoking, drinking, illicit sex, gambling, intoxication and all that. So that is definitely gross sinful activities, but then there are subtle sinful activities also. What is, you know, and so what is actually, so how does Prabhupada define the weakness of heart?
Weakness of the heart.
So how does it define? Means, you know, how does it define that? Twice he has given the same definition.
One is, he's attached to matter, tries to lord over matter.
So lording it over material nature. He has repeated this twice. First weakness of heart, second weakness of heart. Both, you know, in both definitions, we have used learning it over material nature, getting attached to it. So what does that mean? So it is not something, see, there are, so one cannot say, actually, some devotees might think that, okay, I have given up I am following the four regular principles, and I have given the sinful activities. That means that I have become pure now. So does it mean they have become pure devotees? So gross, in a gross way, they have given up those things. But have they given up their subtle tendencies to sin? So what is the basic definition of sin? It's connected to how Prabhupada is defining here. So what is the meaning of lust? What is the meaning of lust? It can be into forms, gross and subtle both. So generally everyone knows what is lust in the gross form, but what is lust in the subtle form? See, generally sin is connected to lust, right? So from lust we know that anger arises. Everyone knows that. And then from anger we fall down. What is subtle sin and subtle lust? Anyone know what is lust? Okay, can someone define in terms of gross form what is the meaning of lust?
That is mainly sexual enjoyment as well as
material. Yeah, so basically carnal pleasure, okay, physical pleasure, carnal pleasure, that is or also what is the meaning of that? To enjoy someone physically, correct? So the basic definition is to enjoy someone. Now tell me one thing. Now, we may have our own beliefs, tradition, culture, it is all impressed upon our, we get conditioned by that. Okay? So basically, when you try to enjoy someone, you are trying to lower it over the material nature. And you are trying to enjoy separately from Krishna. Because we know that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. So instead of him, instead of we giving him the chance to enjoy, we want to enjoy ourselves. So that is called as gross lust in terms of enjoying the physical form. Okay. But subtle lust is actually the same thing. We want to enjoy someone, maybe not in a gross way, but
mentally
we want to enjoy someone means we want to dominate over someone. Right? Or what we try to enjoy the person or whatever things that we want to enjoy, we want to enjoy separately from Krishna. That is called a subtle lust. So without Krishna in the center, that means, why Prabhupada is mentioning here is a very important thing actually. Now he does mention that everything has to be done under the guidance of a spiritual master. Under the proper guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, there is no question of ignorance. So see what happens, you might have given up the gross conditionings of the body, you might have given up the sinful activities in the gross forms, but the subtle form is definitely rooted inside since a long time. Because whatever way, if you think that what you are thinking, what your beliefs are, if that is how it should be, apart from, if you hear something up from the Guru or from Krishna, and if you think, according to your, conditioning or your beliefs, traditions, it should be like that, then that is also lust. And or if you disobey the Guru in instruction, and if you don't, you consider the Guru an ordinary person, you don't hear the instruction of Guru, and if you think that, I know it should be like this, it should be done like this, then also it is lust only, because you are keeping yourself in the center. So, keeping Krishna in the center means, no matter whatever you believe, finally, whatever the Guru says has to be followed. Right? So, obviously, we are all individuals, so we all have our desires and opinions and beliefs and all. But finally, you know, if the guru differs from our opinion and if he wants to follow whatever he says, then we have to submit to that. That is called surrender. Now, without this, there is no question of making any advancement in spiritual life. See, one day in our question answer session, we had a discussion about what is going to take us back to Godhead. And so some devotees were saying chanting, some were saying Vaishnava Seva, some were saying this, that. Someone said, you know, basically most of them were saying about talking about sadhana. But, you know, it was clear that actually nothing is going to take us back to Godhead. The only thing that is going to take us back to Godhead is actually the Guru's mercy. And the Guru's mercy can only manifest when the disciple will actually follow the instructions of the Guru. They might have obviously some obstacle, some problems, so they can definitely discuss with their Guru. But, you know, the Guru gives the most practical suggestion, and so it has to be followed. Cannot disobey. So, you know, the idea of enjoying separately from the Guru or separately trying to follow your own thing, that is also lust only. That is also sinful activity. Because anything that you do, some, you know, which is contrary to what Krishna wants, that is sin. Enjoying separately from Krishna, lowering it over material nature, that is a basic definition of sin. Or it is the weakness of heart. So we have to always remember that, you know, what Prabhupada has given, the basic things, at least the devotees are following certain basic things about, you know, regulative principles they are avoiding, and they are also chanting 16 rounds every day. So these are the basic requirements, but it does not end there. As we know that initiation is actually the beginning of spiritual life. And why it is the basic? Now the question is that, why initiation is the beginning of spiritual life when you have been chanting 16 rounds for a couple of years, and you have been following the regulative principles also? Why it should be the beginning of your spiritual life? What is the answer?
Because it's a formal acceptance by the Guru.
See, forget about the acceptance by the Guru. Guru is very merciful. But what is the role from the disciples' end? How they will make advancement?
Yeah, that is, you have to follow the instructions of the Guru.
Yeah, so the disciples, see, please note one thing, that the problem is that the disciples are always expecting that the Guru should be this, Guru should be that. But no one is thinking that I am supposed to follow what he is telling me throughout the life, you know, and I have to give him the foremost priority. So that is the role of a disciple. If they don't follow that, then no matter whatever they are chanting, hearing, reading, everything is not going to take them back to Godhead. They are not ready. See, because you cannot enter the spiritual world without... See, have you heard any devotee without surrender they have entered the spiritual world? Any devotee, have you heard any example? Or without guru also, devotee will enter the spiritual world. Why? Because they are surrendered. So, surrender is actually the minimum qualification to enter the spiritual world. Because we want to serve the Lord, so service has to be done according to His desire, according to His choice. So, you go to the spiritual world and you tell Him that, no, I think this has to be done, I think this way should be done. Over again, you go back to material world. Because you are trying to enjoy separately. You know, so, the idea, the entire concept of the Guru is, don't make a show. Don't make a show of Guru. Because in the material world, everyone wants a Guru. In the spiritual, see, even in the spiritual circle also, in our ISKCON movement, you can say, in our devotee circle, we are taking initiation because everyone is taking initiation. Because, you know, everyone has a Guru. So we are also, you know, because we want to be called as initiated devotees. So we are also taking initiation. That is all, see, all these things are external things. But the real connection with the Guru is actually how a devotee is trying to surrender to the Guru. How much a devotee is surrendering to the Guru. So this is the foremost qualification of a disciple, actually. So no matter whatever your beliefs are, whatever your traditions are, you have to keep them aside. You should be willing to surrender. You should be willing to... And what is the purpose of learning the Shastra? To come to this point, to come to the realization that now we have got education, you know, our ignorance is destroyed gradually. Prabhupada also talks about ignorance. And then how he is writing, you know, saying that, again, the proper guidance of bona fide spiritual master, there is no question of ignorance. So, even if you read the Shastra, even if you do everything, if you do the process of sadhana bhakti, and you also read the Shastra, but if you don't take guidance of a guru, everything becomes useless. Because the problem is the ignorance is not destroyed. So see, now you are all assembling online classes. You want to know, you want to understand Shastra. And so what is the meaning of that? Some devotee is actually guiding you. Some devotee is helping you to understand. You know, making things clear. Resolve the conflicts, resolve the contradictions. And to give the essence of the Shastra. To make you understand the essence of Shastras. And to make you experience, you know, practical realization in spiritual life. So without a guru, there is no question of any advancement. See, if chanting was the thing, if regulative principle was just the thing, Prabhupada would have just mentioned one thing only throughout his lectures or throughout his books. Four regulative principles follow and chant 16 rounds. Why there is so much, you know, unnecessarily, why you have to waste so much time learning all these things? See, because the entire... And why Prabhupada said Bhagavad Gita is the basic? Because Arjuna is coming to the point of surrendering to the Krishna at the end of the 18th chapter. Arjuna finally surrenders to the Lord. Till now, he is in the state of dilemma. And Krishna is actually clearing his doubts. So finally, after clearing the doubts of Arjuna, Arjuna is actually surrendering to Krishna. And so that is the point of surrender. And Bhagavatam exactly begins at that point. That's why Bhagavatam is actually the postgraduate study. Right? Is this clear? You know, very simple to understand. Because Bhagavatam begins with Dharma Projita Kaitavo. That Bhagavatam is not allowing any cheating religion. Bhagavatam is basically, you know, it is assumed that when you are taking shelter of Bhagavatam, you are pure in your heart to surrender to, you know, you are already at the level where you want to now make progress by surrendering to the Lord, you know, by following the instructions. So, after coming to the point of surrender, you have to start following the instructions. And then Chaitanya Charitamrita is PhD level because Chaitanya Charitamrita is basically, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually displaying what is the role of a sadhaka. You know, he's teaching how a sadhaka is supposed to follow and then what the sadhaka experiences when he follows the process. So it is displaying the highest emotions a devotee can actually experience when they follow the process very properly. Okay, so we should always know one thing very clearly, that the real test of a surrender of a disciple or a devotee is how much they are willing to accept the guru's instruction and how much they are willing to surrender. That is actually the real test. See, there are devotees who will tell you, oh, you know, I am chanting more than 16 rounds, I am chanting this, I am chanting that, I am doing that, I'm doing so much service, I'm doing this, that. But unless and until the devotee is not following someone, there is no question of, you know, sincerity in that devotee. If they are not following someone, there is no question of sincerity. It means that they are independently doing bhakti, and that's the reason, you know, they will not attain perfection. So there is no question of any advancement in spiritual life. And obviously we make advancement because we are following certain things of, you know, what Srila Prabhupada has given to us and what our Gurujan have also given to us or told us. Okay, we do follow that. Maybe not everything, but we are following certain things. So we make advancement. But as and when, you know, the time passes, we have to make sure that we also keep following other things, you know, as and when, you know, the guru is giving instructions according to time, place, circumstances. Otherwise, we'll become stagnant. We'll not progress from that stage further. So, you know, the entire process of devotional service is basically relationship between guru and disciple. How the guru can train the disciple so that the disciple can get rid of the ignorance, can destroy the anarthas, and you know, they can advance to the higher stages of bhakti. Yeah, so without the guidance of a devotee, there is no question of thinking about going back to order. You know, there is no question of attaining even the state of nistha, because there is no question of anartha nivritti. Does this make sense?
Yes, sir.
Right? Where are the other devotees?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Yeah, Sudhamai Mataji?
Yeah.
Who else? Swati Mataji is also there, and I think Sri Kumar Prabhu, you are also there. So, okay, so it's very important that, you know, devotees take proper timely guidance, at least, you know, in certain important matters, they should take guidance from the devotees. And they should progress accordingly. Otherwise, it is just their own speculation. Yeah, without consulting someone, you know, things will be hidden from the devotee. The Lord will not receive it. So we should understand, you know, the purpose of Shastra is also to surrender to Krishna. And because we don't know Krishna, we try to surrender to his representative. Okay, everything, whatever the goal is basically to follow our spiritual master. Because, you know, it's a very simple question. How does a devotee or a disciple know how much they are purified? How do they know that? Anyone has any answer for this? How does a devotee know how much anartha nivritti has taken place? Or how much they are purified? Can someone say, you know, that just by chanting the holy name and following the guided principles and hearing and reading, I have been purified up to like 30%, 40%, 50% or 75%? Can someone say like that?
No.
So who is showing, like, how do we know how much purified we are becoming? How much anarthas are still remaining, and which anarthas are still remaining? Who will tell you?
Guru.
Yeah. So the guru also means, you know, now as we know that the guru, you know, someone who are you are in touch with regularly on a regular basis. It's not necessarily only the Diksha Guru, because he might not be aware of many things. So like whoever you are closely connected to, you know, that devotee can actually tell you. Okay, so very important concept. So now see, what, you know, that is the reason Krishna says at the end of, in the 18th chapter, he says, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Maam Ekam Sharanam Braja. Abandon. See, he's not saying that abandon a dharma. Sarva Dharman Parityaja. He's not saying Sarva Dharmam Parityaja, right? What is the meaning? Forget about and leave all your so-called concepts, beliefs, dharma, so-called, you know, according to our conception, our notion, whatever we think, oh, this is right, this is wrong. Forget about all these things. Surrender these things. Abandon all these lower things. Abandon these lower dharmas. Maam ekam sharanam braj. take shelter of my instructions. Whatever Krishna says is ultimate dharma. You cannot see. Yudhishthira Maharaj also tried to disobey Krishna's instruction, and that is the reason it is mentioned that he had to experience hell for a moment. Right? So, so Krishna's instruction is actually the ultimate dharma, and that for that we have to forget and we have to abandon our lower dharmas. If you are not willing to do it, you cannot enter the spiritual world. So if not now, then in the next life. You must be ready for that. So always have this, you know, just as like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that when you chant the holy name, you should have this necklace around you, on your neck, all the time. So similarly, all the disciples or the devotees, you know, for them, the necklace that has to be strung around is basically the necklace of the Guru's instruction. They can never forget the Guru's instruction, and they should always think that the Guru's instruction is actually the most important, limb of bhakti. It's the most important limb of bhakti. The highest limb of bhakti is basically the Guru's instruction. Lest all the other things, we should... So one should have this belief, strong belief that one should not be attached to other things. One should be attached only to the Guru's instruction. Then things will become easier. If you are attached to certain processes of bhakti and if you are not attached to your Guru, then unfortunately you cannot make so much advancement. So attachment to Guru's instruction is actually the first and foremost. Okay, always remember that. And he is the one who will also protect you. Because you will have his shelter. If you don't follow him act independently, then you are at your own. That means, you know, a sadhaka, especially a conditioned soul, no matter whatever amount of sadhana he will do, his sadhana is insignificant in the eyes of Krishna. Because a conditioned soul cannot go beyond a certain limit of sadhana. If you want to really know what is sadhana, you have to refer to the previous yugas. Or certain, certain devotees like Prabhupada. So Prabhupada and then our Acharyas and Goswamis. The sadhana that actually they are doing, that is real sadhana. What we are doing is imitation sadhana. Like, you know, we have this Shuddhanam and we have the Namabhas. So our devotion is actually a semblance of devotion. Don't think that our devotion is purified, you know, it is Shuddha. It is pure devotion. It is not pure devotion. It is semblance of devotion. And in most of the cases, in fact, it is with offenses. So always remember one thing. Don't get carried away by your sadhana. It's an illusion. Don't get carried away by seva. It's an illusion. The only one thing that is for sure is that the Guru is actually the bona fide representative of Krishna. So he has to certify. Otherwise it is just semblance of devotion. And as Krishna says, that even if you worship him perfectly, but if you don't worship his devotee, you know, even if your sadhana is perfect, your worship is perfect, still there is no guarantee you can attain him. And then on the other hand, he also mentions that, however, if you worship his devotee, and even though if your sadhana is imperfect or your worship is imperfect, but Krishna gives guarantee that you will come to me, you will attain me. So that is actually the significance of taking a shelter of a devotee of the Lord. Then the Lord is very easily pleased. Okay, so Prabhupada says many times, don't try to approach Krishna directly. Right? So, and in the Adi Puran also Krishna tells Arjuna that if you tell that you are my devotee, then actually you are not my devotee. But if you say that you are the devotee of my devotee, then you are truly my devotee. Okay. So the letters that I'm sharing in the group, so they also talk about the same thing. And most of the letters Prabhupada has written to his disciples, he always establishes this fact that Krishna and Guru simultaneously, both. You cannot, you know, compromise on one. Okay, so anyone has any question about this or comment? Okay, so there are innumerable advantages, and there is the, you know, the guarantee is also there. If you take shelter of a devotee under the guidance of, see, and so don't make a show also. You know, just because it is mentioned everywhere, so okay, just for formality purpose, we call some devotee as our Siksha Guru or our Diksha Guru, but don't follow him, don't share with him, you know, many things. You know, years after years, we are not, the Guru is not even aware what the disciple is doing. So is that, you know, that becomes a very formal relationship. I mean, you know, formal in the sense that it's a formality. But there is no significance there. There is no depth in that relationship. Okay, so it is, so the, you know, guarantee is always there. It's the most safest part also. If you are on your own, then there is no guarantee, and it is a very risky path. Okay, so we have understood what is actually real sin. So sin has two forms, gross and subtle. The subtle form is actually the one which is very difficult to remove because it requires real surrender. Okay, and so coming back to the question of, can a sinful person become a pure devotee? So the answer is yes and no. If the person continues to commit sin in the process, then it will take a long time, you know, to become a pure devotee. And if he is not committing sin, if he has left sin, you know, like subtle and gross both, then definitely he can become a pure devotee. There is no qualification or any particular, you know, because chanting the holy name, anyone can do it, as we know from Shastra. So any devotee, like we have seen in the example of Mrigaraj Hunter and Valmiki Rishi also, they were like most sinful people. But because they took the advice of Narad Muni very seriously, they chanted the names of the Lord, they followed the process strictly, they surrendered to the Guru basically. Okay, and that's the reason they became pure devotees. Okay, so any sinful person can become pure devotee, provided that they leave their sinful mentality. Jagai Mother also, most sinful people. But after surrendering to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they did not commit one single sin. In fact, they repented and they wanted to serve Vaishnavas. So, you know, they quickly, very quickly, they attained Krishna Prem also. So that, right? Okay. So with this, we are finishing the 15th chapter. We can continue the 16th chapter now. And I wanted to know, how is the progress going, you know, with regards to the questions that we have assigned to the devotees? Everyone started working on it?
Getting the things Shiva Tattva and all that from the Veda is it's not very easy.
See, you have to
because Shiva is being told in so many, somewhere Supreme Lord, somewhere this. So it's a very
you have to try your best, Madhari, you know. And as I said, that you can ask any senior devotee also, any senior brahmachari, any devotee you want, you can ask them directly for references, or you can ask them what is the reference, then provide the reference. The idea is that if you are able to get it from the Shrutis, that is extremely good, because you know, then there is no question of any person rejecting it. So definitely, you know, we can see, we have reasonings, you know, we can definitely give a lot of evidences to the person, but it becomes very easier for the other person to accept the Shruti, because many people, they have this faith in Shruti. Okay. They might not have so much faith in Smriti, but they have a lot of faith in Shruti. So we don't have to even think that whether the person has faith in Smriti or Smriti. You know, if he has, you know, even if he has more faith in Shruti, and if he has statements from the Shrutis, it becomes very easier. And we also should know one thing, that as ISKCON devotees, no one should tell us tomorrow that they are just quoting Shrutis. They do not quote any Shrutis. And the entire thing becomes... See, one thing is there, that Jiva Goswami has already established the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam in his Tattva Sandarbh. So that is something, you know, we can always challenge them. But the problem is that they won't be willing to listen to these challenges unless they are really open-minded. Generally, if you quote from the Shruti, and what does Jiva Goswami do? You know, he also quotes from the Shruti only to prove the Vedic nature of Srimad Bhagavatam. He also quotes from Shrutis. And then you know, he also quotes from Mahabharata, he also quotes from Puranas, you know. So you try your best, whatever you can get. You can ask any senior devotee, you know, any person who is, you know, deeply knowledgeable in Shastra, and you can get. And you try to get it. So what we will do is, so see, even I don't claim that I can find all the statements from the Shrutis. And I can, you know, because it is, the ocean is unlimited, okay. So you can do as much as you can, but then, you know, see, that's the reason we have so many devotees who will be contributing. At the end, I will also contribute certain things. You know, if I see that certain statements are missing, then I will also contribute something. And if some devotees feel that there are, even after my contribution, if there are certain statements missing, then they can also, you know, contribute more. So it's a team effort, basically. So although you are doing research for one question, each one of you are doing for one question, but at the end, we can all have, a proper, we'll all go through the questions and we will all try to understand, you know, which Shastra evidences we can quote from Shrutis and Smritis, so that it will be complete. In fact, what we can do, you know, I was thinking, you know, if this turned out to be a very great Shastric evidence, then we can also publish a book. We can print a book also. You know, it will, and then we can ask the BBD to distribute it. Such a useful thing, you know, because it will be, everything is going to be assembled at one place. So, you know, just like my frequently asked question that I had done in Purushottam Mass, and I'm thinking, you know, to actually publish a book through that, you know. So, similarly, this also can be published in a small book, because I don't think that there is a book out about, you know, these things. Like, you know, to which is assembling all these important concepts in one place and quoting all the evidences from Shastra only. Have you heard about any book like this? You know, all the, for one particular topic, all the evidences from the Shastra at one place. Have you heard? Have you read any book? If there is a book like this, you know, I would be most interested to read it, because it's so important. So it is, you know, this, you know, what you are going to do is something which is going to be very significant. You know, if you are thinking in the lines of publishing a book, it will create a great service in the future. it will render great service to all the ISKCON devotees and to outsider also. So easy to, you know, just give the book and, you know, everyone will actually know. So if you are thinking, you know, I would probably suggest and request the devotees to think in that direction, that, okay, you know, we want to publish a book. And that's the reason every devotee should put the best efforts. Right? And see, you don't have to do so much. You just have to, if you know there are statements in the Shastra, you have read somewhere, just refer to it and just note it down. And if you don't know where it is mentioned, you know, just ask some devotee. Okay? So, is that okay, Mataji?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a very exciting seva. This is not like Bhakti Shastri or Bhakti Vaibhav and all that, you know, where we are having exam and all. It's a very exciting, you know, service, and you know, it's very, you know, you can say it is, I mean, I don't think, you know, there is, devotees have to take any anxiety for this service. It's a very, I mean, I think everyone should enjoy this rather than, you know, thinking it like an exam or something, because it is not an exam, definitely, right? So, it's going to be fun, you know, one should think like that. Okay, so, yeah, you can try your best, Mataji. And Shri Kumar Pauri had, he just messaged that you have selected what's 12th question. And, but have you made sure that other devotees, they have not selected that question? Are you there too?
Yeah, I'm not there in Q&A.
Huh?
I'm not there in the program of on Monday, which is question answers.
Yeah, you are not there. But what I'm asking is, has anyone selected the 12th question already? You know, have you checked? Chintamani Mataji, have you checked?
No, I haven't checked.
I checked it, but nobody has taken that question.
That is
okay, which is that question?
I checked in BG, I didn't find anybody taking that question.
Okay, which is that question?
Question number 12.
Yeah, but what is the question?
One minute.
What?
One minute, I'll tell you. Hare Krishna Mahamantra.
Oh, okay, that one.
It's Kali Yuga Mantra.
Achcha, okay. Yeah. Okay, so you can do research on that. You can try to find out evidences. Right. Okay, what about the other devotees? Sudhamani Mataji, have you started?
No, Prabhu, I have not started. I'll start tomorrow.
Yeah. So, yeah, try your best, you know, like, I mean, I'm seriously thinking of, you know, in the future we can actually publish this. So it will be a great achievement, you know, for our group devotees. You know, if this book will be published, then it will be a great achievement. Okay, and Swati Mataji? Are you there, Mataji?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Yes,
yeah.
Prabhuji, I just started, okay. But I didn't get much information on that. I just
Okay. It's okay. You know, you can take your time. We'll have 3 weeks for this. So, try your best. I think one question I have forgotten to add, you know, the 15th question, is that, you know, different Puranas claim that our particular demigod is the Supreme. So, what is the evidence that Krishna is the Supreme? Like, actually, I think that, I think Swati Madhuri, you have taken this question. Who has just taken this question that Krishna is the Supreme Personality? Maybe Vandana Mataji, I don't remember. But if someone has taken this question, please make sure that you also address this in your answer. That different Puranas, they mentioned, they claim their particular God as Supreme. So, like, how to make sure that, or how to understand that Krishna is still the Supreme. Okay. So, we'll start with 16th chapter. Sudama Madhuri, can you start?
Okay. Chapter 16, The Divine and Demonic Natures. 16.1-3. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Abhayam Satta Samshuddhir Jnana Yoga Vyavastidaha Danam Damascha Yajnamcha Sotyaya Stabha Ajavam Ahimsa Satyam Akrodas Dhaka Shandir Abhishunam Daya Vudeshu Alo Luktvam Mardavam Hari Achapalam Te Chakshamadra Dishaucham Adroho Nati Manida Bhavandi Sampadam Devim Abhijadisya Bharada. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault-finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, willingness, and freedom from envy and from the passion for honor. These transcendental qualities, O son of Bharata, belong to godly men endowed with divine nature. Purport. In the beginning of the 15th chapter, the benignity of this material world was explained. The extra roots coming out of it were compared to the activities of living entities, some auspicious, some inauspicious. In the 9th chapter also, the devas were godly and the asuras, the ungodly or demons were explained. Now, according to Vedic rites, activity in the mode of goodness are considered auspicious for progress on the path of liberation. And such activities are known as Devi Prakriti, transcendental by nature. Those who are situated in the transcendental nature may progress on the path of liberation. For those who are acting in the modes of passion and ignorance, on other hand, there is no possibility for liberation. Either they will have to remain in this material world as human beings, or they will descend among the species of animals or even lower life forms. In the 16th chapter, the Lord explains both the transcendental nature and its attendant qualities and the demonic nature and its qualities. He also explains the advantages and disadvantages of these qualities. The word abhijadasya in reference to one born of transcendental qualities or godly tendencies is very significant. To beget a child in a godly atmosphere is known in the Vedic scriptures as Garbhadana Samskara. If the parents want a child in the godly qualities, they should follow the 10 principles recommended for the social life of human being. In Bhagavad Gita, we have studied also before that sex life for begetting a good child is Krishna himself. Sex life is not condemned, provided the process is used in Krishna consciousness. Those who are in Krishna consciousness at least should not beget children like cats and dogs, but should beget them so that they may become Krishna conscious after birth. That should be the advantage of children born of a father and mother absorbed in Krishna consciousness. the social institution known as Vanashrama Dharma, the institution dividing society into four divisions of social life and four occupational divisions of class. It is not meant to divide human society according to birth. Such divisions are in terms of educational qualifications. They are to keep the society in a state of peace and prosperity. The qualities mentioned herein are explained as transcendental qualities meant for making a person progress in spiritual understanding so that he can get liberated from the material world. In the Varnashrama institution, the sannyasi or the person in the renounced mode of life is considered to be the head or the spiritual master of all the social statuses and orders. A brahmana is considered to be the spiritual master of three other sections of the society, namely the kshatriyas, the vaishyas and the shudras. But a sannyasi who is on the top of the institution is considered to be the spiritual master of the brahmanas also. For a sannyasi, the first qualification should be fearlessness, because a sannyasi has to be alone without any support or guarantee of support. He has simply to depend on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one thinks, after I leave my connections, who will protect me? He should not accept the renounced order of life. One must be fully convinced that Krishna or Supreme Personality of Godhead in his lockless aspect as Paramatma is always with him, that he is seeing everything, and he always knows that one what one intends to do. One must thus have firm conviction that Krishna as Paramatma will take care of a soul surrendered to him. I shall never be alone. One should think, even if I live in the darkest region of a forest, I shall be accompanied by Krishna and he will give me all protection. That conviction is called abhayam, fearlessness. This state of mind is necessary for a person in the renounced order of life. Then he has to purify his existence. There are so many rules and regulations to be followed in the renounced order of life. Most important of all, a sannyasi is strictly forbidden to have any intimate relationship with a woman. He is even forbidden to talk with a woman in a secluded place. Lord Chaitanya was an ideal sannyasi. And he was at Puri, his feminine devotees could not even come near to offer their respects. They were advised to bow down from a distant place. This is not a sign of hatred for women as a class, but it is a stricture imposed on sannyasi not to have close connection with women. One has to follow the rules and regulations of a particular status of life in order to purify his existence. For a sannyasi, intimate relation with women and possession of wealth for sense gratification are strictly forbidden. The ideal sannyasi was Lord Chaitanya himself, and we can learn from his life that he was very strict in regards to women. Although he is considered to be the most liberal incarnation of Godhead, accepting the most fallen conditioned soul, he strictly followed the rules and regulations of the sannyasa order of life in connection with association with women. One of his personal associates, namely Chota Haridas, was associated with Lord Chaitanya along with other confidential personal associates. But somehow other, this Chota Haridas looked lustily on a young woman, and Lord Chaitanya was so strict that he at once rejected him from the society of his personal associate. The Lord Chaitanya said, for a sannyasi or anyone who is aspiring to get out of the clutches of material nature and trying to elevate himself to spiritual nature and go back home, back to Godhead, for him looking towards material possessions and women for sense gratification, not even enjoying them, but just looking towards them, is such a propensity, is so condemned that he had better commit suicide before experiencing such illicit desires. So these are the process of for purification. The next term is Jnana Yoga Vyavasthiti. Being engaged in cultivation of knowledge. Sannyasi life is meant for distributing knowledge to the householders and others who have forgotten their real life or spiritual advancement. A sannyasi is supposed to beg from door to door for his livelihood. But this does not mean that he is a beggar. Humility is also one of the qualifications of transcendentally situated person. And out of sheer humility, the sannyasi goes from door to door, not exactly for the purpose of begging, but to see the householders and awaken them to Krishna consciousness. This is the duty of a sannyasi. If he is actually advanced and so ordered by his spiritual master, he should preach Krishna consciousness with logic and understanding. And if one is not so advanced, he should not accept the renounced order of life. But even if one has accepted the renounced order of life without sufficient knowledge, he should engage himself fully in hearing from a bona fide spiritual master to cultivate knowledge. A sannyasi or one in the renounced order of life must be situated in fearlessness, sattva samshuddhi. purity and jnana yoga knowledge. The next item is
okay, Madhuri. You,
yes.
I think the purport is quite long, so I can continue actually.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So the next item is charity. Charity is meant for the householders. The householders should earn a livelihood by an honorable means and spend 50% of their income to propagate Krishna consciousness all over the world. Thus, householders should give in charity to institutional societies that are engaged in that way. Charity should be given to the right receiver. There are different kinds of charity as will be explained later on. Charity in the mode of goodness, passion, ignorance. Charity in the mode of goodness is recommended by the scriptures. The charity in mode of passion, ignorance is not recommended because it is simply waste of money. Charity should be given only to propagate Krishna consciousness all over the world. That is charity in the mode of goodness. Then as far as Dhamma is self-controlled, is concerned, it is not only meant for other orders of religious society, but is especially meant for the householder. Although he has a wife, householder should not use his senses for sex life unnecessarily. There are restrictions for the householders even in sex life, which they should only be engaged in for the propagation of children. If he does not require children, he should not enjoy sex life with his wife. Modern society enjoys sex life with contraceptive methods or more abominable methods to avoid the responsibility of children. This is not in the transcendental quality, but is demoniac. If anyone, even if his householder, wants to make progress in spiritual life, he must control his sex life and should not beget a child without the purpose of serving Krishna. If he is able to beget children who will be in Krishna consciousness, one can produce hundreds of children. But without this capacity, one should not indulge only for sense pleasure. Sacrifice is another item to be performed by householders because sacrifices require a large amount of money. Those in other orders of life, namely Brahmachari, Vanaprastha and Sannyas, have no money. They live by begging. So for performance of different types of sacrifice meant for the householders, they should perform Agnihotra sacrifice as enjoined in the Vedic literature. But such sacrifices at the present moment are very expensive and it is not possible for any householder to perform them. The best sacrifice recommended in this age is called the Sankirtan Yajna. This Sankirtan Yajna chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare is the best and most inexpensive sacrifice. Everyone can adopt it and derive benefits. So these three items, namely charity, sense control and performance of sacrifice, are meant for the householder. Then Swadhyay, Vedic study, is meant for Brahmachari or student life. Brahmachari should have no connection with women. They should live a life of celibacy and engage the mind in the study of Vedic literature for cultivation of spiritual knowledge. This is called Swadhyay. Tapas or austerity is meant, specially meant for the retired life. One should not remain a householder throughout his whole life. He must always remember that there are four divisions of life: Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. After Grihastha householder life, one should retire. If one lives for 100 years, he should spend 25 years in student, 25 in householder life, 25 in retired life, and 25 in the renounced order of life. These are the regulations of the Vedic religious discipline. A man retired from household life must practice austerities of the body, mind, and tongue. That is tapasya. The entire Vanashram Dharma society is meant for tapasya. Without tapasya or austerity, no human being can get liberation. The theory that there is no need for austerity in life, one can go on speculating and everything will be nice, is recommended either in Vedic literature nor in Bhagavad Gita. Such theories are manufactured by show bottle spiritualists who are trying to gather more followers. If there are restrictions, rules and regulations, people will not become attracted. Therefore, those who want followers in the name of religion best to have a show only. They don't restrict the lives of their students or their own lives. But that method is not approved by the Vedas. As far as the Brahminical quality of simplicity is concerned, not only should a particular order of life follow this principle, but every member, be in the Brahmachari Ashram, Grihastha, Vanaprastha or Sannyas Ashram, one should be very simple and straightforward. Ahimsa means not arresting the progressive life of any living entity. One should not think that since the spirit spark is never killed, even after killing the body, there is no harm in killing animals for sense gratification. People are now addicted to eating animals in spite of having an ample supply of grain, fruits and milk. There is no necessity for animal killing. This injunction is for everyone. Then there is no alternative. One may kill an animal, but it should be offered in sacrifice. At any rate, when there is an ample food supply for humanity, persons who are desiring to make advancement in spiritual realization should not commit violence to animals. Real ahimsa means not checking anyone's progressive life. The animals are also making progress in their evolutionary life by transmigrating from one category of animal life to another. If a particular animal is killed, then his progress is checked. If an animal is staying in a particular body for so many days, so many years, and is untimely killed, then he has to come back again in that form of life to complete the remaining days in order to be promoted to another species of life. So their progress should not be checked simply to satisfy one's palate. This is called ahimsa. Satyam, this word means that one should not distort the truth for some personal interest. In the literature, there are some difficult passages, but the meaning or the purpose should be learned from the bona-fide spiritual master. There is a process of understanding the Vedas. Shruti means one should hear from authority. One should not construe some interpretation for his personal interest. There are so many commentaries on Bhagavad Gita that misinterpret the original text. The real import of the word should be presented, and that should be learned from a bona fide spiritual master. Akrodh means to check anger. Even if there is provocation, one should be tolerant. For once one becomes angry, his whole body becomes polluted. Anger is a product of more of passion and lust. So one who is transcendentally situated should check himself from anger. Apaisunam means that one should not find fault with others or correct them unnecessarily. Of course, to call a thief is not fault-finding, but to call an honest person a thief is very much offensive for one who is making advancement in spiritual life. Greed means one should be very modest and must not perform some act which is abominable. Chapalam, determination, means that one should not be agitated or frustrated in some attempt. There may be failure in some attempt, but one should not be sorry for that. He should make progress with patience and determination. The word tejas used here is meant for kshatriyas. Kshatriyas should always be very strong to be able to give protection to the weak. They should not pose themselves as non-violent. If violence is required, they must exhibit it. But a person who is able to curb down this enemy may, under certain conditions, show forgiveness. He may excuse minor offenses. Saucham means cleanliness, not only in mind and body, but in one's dealings also. It is especially meant for the mercantile people who should not deal in the black market. Nati manita. Not expecting honor. Applies to the Sudras, the worker class, which are considered, according to Vedic intention, to the lowest of the four classes. They should not be puffed up with any unnecessary prestige or honor and should remain in their own status. It is the duty of the Sudras to offer respect to the higher class for the upkeep of the social order. All these 23 qualifications mentioned are transcendental qualities. They should be cultivated according to different statuses of social and occupational order. The purpose is that even though material conditions are miserable, if these qualities are developed by practice by all classes of men, then gradually it is possible to rise to the highest platform of transcendental realization. Yeah, so very interesting purport. So many, you know, points can be discussed from this. Yeah, so basically then all dealing about the responsibilities of various ashrams. And of course, you know, all these are very ideal standards to be followed. So if one is following as much as possible to close to these ideal standards, then they are properly engaged. But every, you know, finally everything actually, you know, boils down to the following instructions of the Guru. Because see, in the day-to-day world and in the current world, see, all these things are like whatever is given here, the Varnashram system and all that. It is meant to elevate the devotees or person who are interested in spiritual life. So now, these instructions, they will definitely depend upon type and circumstances. It will change according to that, because you cannot expect the same standard of following in the previous yugas compared to this yuga. So there has to be, and what to speak of the yugas, but even in Kali Yuga also, during the time of Kshatriya Mahaprabhu, you know, devotees, they were having very high standard. And even after him also, after Kshatriya Mahaprabhu passed away, even I think till the time of next 200 years, devotees had a very high standard because the culture and tradition was very old. It was very orthodox. So they were actually following many of these things. But with time, these things have become degraded. I mean, you know, these things have not become degraded. I mean, we have degraded these things. You can say like that. So that, you know, because what happens is our capacity to perform austerity has gone down like anything. Our health has gone down. You know, just how much sadhana can we do? How much austerity can we perform? These things, and then, you know, because we are conditioned since a long time, it's not that right from the beginning we were devotees of the Lord. So everything became very easy to perform all the austerities and to perform the sadhana and everything. You know, like no one is, see, most of the devotees, they are not going to be on Raghunatha platform or they are not going to be on spontaneous platform. Most of the devotees probably, you know, they might have, you know, it's not necessary that they will be liking or they have a natural attachment towards the Lord. So for them, it's going to be a struggle. So it means that, you know, they have to, 20, 30 years they have spent non-Krishna conscious lifestyle, and then suddenly they are going to change their life. So it is going to take a lot of time, and it is a struggle for them, right? So, and then even the devotees who are actually also advanced in their spiritual lives, they are, you know, naturally attached to the Lord, they might not be able to perform certain austerities because of their health issues or conditionings or whatever it is. So, you know, it is best that they take proper guidance from the devotees and advance gradually. So, you know, finally the aim is, the goal should be clear that one is supposed to get over of their responsibilities as they grow old. Now, ideally, Prabhupada is mentioning about the age, at the age of 50. Now, it does not mean that every devotee has to retire at the age of 50. It can, you know, like in Kali Yuga, things can be adjusted. So, like some devotees can retire at the age of 55, some can at the age of 60. But obviously, I think not beyond 60 because the health is going to deteriorate like anything. What to speak of at the age of 50, even at the age of 40 also, you know, people start having, you know, they start showing bad health. So then, that's the reason this 50 years of age is generally ideal. But now with Kali Yuga progressing, what will happen is people actually, they will die at the age of 60. So then if you consider half, 50% of the life, then it is assumed here that one will live for 100 years. And that's how 50% is like 50 years. But as the time progresses, if people will live for 60 years, then they should actually retire at the age of 30. Which is, you know, to think retirement at the age of 30 is quite impractical in today's world. But there is a solution. It's not, you know, I think everything has to be planned. You cannot neglect this thing. If you neglect it, then you'll bear the consequences for that. So you'll have to, your entire life you'll have to work, and you'll not be able to focus on your sadhana also. Plus, one should also get over with his material responsibilities. There is no need to get too much entangled in material responsibilities. Whatever is your main responsibility, if you sacrifice that responsibility and engage in other responsibilities, material responsibilities, at the cost of sacrificing your main responsibility, which is actually to, you know, become self-realized, or at least go deep in your Krishna consciousness, if you sacrifice that responsibility for other responsibilities, then that is also actually not going to help you. Because, see, one should have faith that if you surrender to Krishna completely, as the Bhagavatam says, that you are not indebted to anyone, not indebted to the parents, not indebted to Guru, I mean Guru in the sense, you know, someone who has given you education, material education, or the king, you know, or the leader. We are not indebted to the demigods, to the forefathers also. So forget about it. One should have firm faith that Krishna is actually everything, and he is the root cause. That watering the root of the tree will satisfy everything. Because, see, the problem is we identify with the body of our relatives, and that's how we get caught up. We think that, okay, we have to do certain things. Certain things are remaining. But, you know, at the right time, at the right age, and what is the right time, what is the right age, I think, the best guidance can, you know, be given by the Guru, Okay, because if he knows the circumstances, situation, he can give proper guidance at the right time. So he is the one who actually can tell us what time and what age we should retire and we should focus exclusively on Krishna. Now, what if you spend too much time on serving your relatives and you miss out the main priority or responsibility of, you know, absorbing yourself in Krishna consciousness? Then what will happen? You will come back and your relatives also come back. See, the idea is that the more you become advanced, the more you get attached to the Lord, the more your relatives get benefited automatically. You don't have to worry about that. Because, so, you know, the problem is that we identify with the body. We are seeing the body of a person and then we think that, okay, we'll have to do certain things. But it's not necessary. Like how do we know that, you know, what? Because if you are already grown up, if you cross the age of 50, then actually, you know, ideally, and if you have taken care of your financial needs and responsibilities, at least whatever responsibility you had, you know, for your children and for yourself, if you're done with that, then there is nothing else to do other than to surrender to Krishna completely. Which means that, so surrender means, you know, I'm not saying that, okay, they will, because obviously, you know, with age, now someone who is joining Krishna consciousness at a very old age, for them, this idea of surrender sounds very unfamiliar. And they will not be able to surrender also because, you know, this independent nature is always there. That is very deeply rooted. Unless and until one is willing to accept the instruction of Guru, associate with devotees and, you know, have a advanced association, then only one can come out of it. Otherwise, very, 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 very difficult. Especially at the advanced age, if one is coming to spiritual life, it's mostly they will have to take next birth. Mostly. But if the devotee is very sincere, he understands the essence of the Shastra and everything, the process, then he will surely take proper shelter of Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, Vaishnavas, and, you know, you start following them and try to at least make an attempt and try to overcome, you know, the anarthas. So ideally speaking, you know, 50% of one's life, they have to give to Krishna. In fact, 50%, not 50%, you know, ideally 100%. So, because the process is that we just don't have to work. You know, the process is that we have to work and we have to do sadhana, both together. As long as we are working and as long as you have responsibilities. That is the process. As soon as you are done with your responsibilities, you are supposed to dedicate full time. Okay. Otherwise, very difficult to give up the attachments. Extremely difficult. So, it is best that devotees make proper guidance from senior devotees and come to a point where they can actually plan and manage their life in such a way that they can spend maximum time in Krishna consciousness. That should be the goal. Obviously, no one is advising devotees to escape from responsibilities. But maybe, you know, there are some responsibilities which are probably not required. You know, and as we know that, you know, see, technically speaking, if a devotee, he is surrendering to Krishna, which means that, you know, let's say a devotee at a young age, you know, he's the only child and he joins the Brahmacharya Ashram. Okay, if he is a sincere devotee, if he is sacrificing and surrendering himself to the spiritual master, technically and ideally, he is not supposed to think of other responsibilities because, see, we are not talking about pure devotees. The example is not of pure devotees. Prabhupada made it very clear. You know, he was the one who encouraged that devotees should, you know, remain brahmachari. And those who went into Grihastha Ashram, he encouraged them to also set a good standard. As we have, you know, heard from the purport, you know, about the householders. So he wanted both of them. See, now obviously brahmachari can full-time, they can dedicate their services and everything. But for a householder, it is very important that they follow these three things. Prabhupada talks about charity, he talks about sacrifice, and he talks about austerity, I think, something like that, okay? So if they do these three things in their householder life and then finally he's asking them to retire, so that they can also come to a point where they can actually, now these remaining 25 years of a Grihastha, they have to do sadhana, they have to do strict sadhana. So that will help them to become detached, and that will help them to actually focus on Krishna consciousness after the 50 years of age. Okay, so it's a practice. Again, it's a practice. You know, they will practice and then they will finally attain that kind of absorption. If they don't have a proper sadhana in Grihastha Ashram, it's very difficult that they will be attached to Krishna. They will be more attached to the worldly, you know, to the material nature, basically. Okay, so the brahmachari is, you know, if the brahmachari continues as a brahmachari, Naishthika brahmachari, and he then later on he takes sannyas, that means throughout his life he has surrendered to his guru, and technically, ideally, he is actually free from all responsibilities. He has nothing to worry about. Krishna will take care of everything. Okay, so I am not giving examples of any pure devotees who were completely surrendered to Lord. And no, Prabhupada made it very practical. Engage your senses, engage your activities in the service of Krishna. Engage your talents in the service of Lord. And make sure that you don't have any other time to think of. The ideal mind is devil workshop, right? So if a devotee is right from the beginning, is utilizing his everything for the service of Lord, technically he is actually surrendered to the Lord, you know, completely. So that means that the Lord will actually take care of all other responsibilities. He is not indebted to anything. So this particular statement from Srimad Bhagavatam is basically for pure devotees or for surrendered devotees, to completely surrender devotees. But in our context, you know, in the examples of brahmacharis and sannyasis that we have, if they are following their gurus and, you know, they are having a proper spiritual lifestyle, then they are all, in one sense, they are also completely surrendered. Okay? So they are free from their responsibility. And the Grihasthas, they are supposed to have their responsibilities till the age of 50. After that, ideally, they should get rid of that. So they have to make plans. If you remember, I think it was in the Bhagavad Gita class only, that Anand Vrindavan Prabhu, you know, my godbrother, a very wonderful example how he has planned his life. So even though he has been a Grihastha with one son, you know, somehow he planned his ashram in such a way that within 20 years he could retire. And that's what he did, basically. Okay. And he's conducting seminars because Maharaj was so pleased with his, you know, his style of his management of, you know, finances and everything, you know, in such a way that he could retire at the right age. Maharaj was so pleased with him, so he instructed him that now you should instruct all other devotees how to plan and manage their finances so they can also retire early and they can focus more on Krishna. So now he is conducting seminars. So he is mentioning that actually even a Grihastha devotee with children, they can also retire in 20 years if they properly manage their finances, and they obviously, but they should have a goal that they want to retire early. Okay, so, you know, the planning is very important. Every devotee has to plan, every Grihastha devotee. So ideally, the Grihastha is supposed to surrender in this way, that 25 years of Brahmacharya, 25 years of Grihastha ashram, and then finally he has to enter Vanaprastha ashram. That should be his motive and target. Now, it's not necessary that a Grihastha must take Vanaprastha or sannyas. You know, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommended and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said that a Grihastha can stay in their ashram, but internally they should cultivate detachment, which means that they should get free from their bodily attachments. And externally they should, even if they stay together, nothing wrong in that. Okay, that's absolutely okay. So, see, this is how Prabhupada adjusted things. Now, Vanaprastha, ideally one is supposed to take at the age of 50 years. But if a Grihastha is unable to take Vanaprastha for some reasons, and you know, as you know, Prabhupada said that if the husband and wife both are Krishna conscious, they both want to preach, That's an ideal example. So there is no need to take sannyas. There is no need to take vanaprastha also probably. Okay, so see, what is vanaprastha? Vanaprastha basically means that you give up that in physical enjoyment, you know, the bodily enjoyment, you know, you give up that desire. So that is vanaprastha. So as soon as, even as a grihastha, if you give up that mentality or desire, then you become a vanaprastha. So basically, you are not supposed to physically associate with, you know, each other. Okay? But you can both stay together and you can serve for the pleasure of Lord. So if that is the case, you know, if they are absorbed, both of them are absorbed, they are attached to the Lord, then there is no need for taking vanaprastha or sannyas, because that is equivalent to being a vanaprastha and sannyas ashram. And it also depends on the services they are doing. Okay, now if the husband, he can do more services with sannyas, then ideally for the husband, he should take sannyas. Okay, but if their services are demanding to stay together, then, you know, it's a higher service to stay together as a grihastha. Okay. So all these things are very important, see, because we have to have a target. We should have set a target in the future and we should plan according to that. So maybe, you know, someone will think that, oh, why to think so long term? You know, like, we'll see what will happen that time. But that is actually escaping from that responsibility, because, you know, the desire to enjoy is there. So if you neglect, see, why do you manage your finances? Why do you plan your finances? You know, if you are planning your finances, that means that you have to plan your spiritual life also. So you cannot compromise anywhere. You cannot neglect. The entire purpose of Grihastha Ashram is basically to inspire the wife and to inspire the husband to be more Krishna conscious. So if that is not developing with time, then one can take sannyas also. If the wife is not advancing in spiritual life, and if she is not so much supportive, then one the husband should ideally take sannyas. And on the other hand, you know, if the husband is not so supportive, obviously now the concept of sannyas for the woman is not there, but the woman has to take more devotee association. Supposed to associate more with devotees, advance devotees, and get more absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And the husband is supposed to support that. Okay, even though the husband is not, if he is not so much inclined, but at least he should support. So these are all, you know, the basic things that Prabhupada repeated many times for brahmachari, vanaprasthis, sannyasis, and all. You know, some of these qualities are also mentioned here, 26 qualities. So any question about this, you know, any practical question? So how many of you have joined Krishna consciousness at a advanced age? Anyone? Are you all there? Hare Krishna. Hare Bol.
Hi,
Hello, Krishna.
Yeah. So I'm not able to hear others. I heard only Sudama Mataji's voice.
Hare Krishna.
Are you all able to hear?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah, did you disconnect or what? Did someone disconnect? Hari Bol. Hari Bol.
Yeah, someone got disconnected.
Someone got disconnected, okay. Who got disconnected? Chintamani Mataji, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, did you hear everything that we are discussing?
Yes.
Okay, so did you hear the question?
Yes, Prabhu.
Hari Bol. Did you hear the question?
Yes.
Okay, so what about Chintamani Mataji and Tumuri?
Yes,
Prabhu. Huh?
Yes, Prabhu.
Yeah, so what is the, like, I asked our, you know, devotees, if they joined at the advantage, so at what age did you join Krishna consciousness?
Late 30s.
Okay, that is also not so, you know, such a long time. Yeah, and I Chintamani Mataji and Prabhu, what time did you join? Which age?
I joined in my 30s.
In your 30s. Hari Bol.
Yes, 40s.
40s. Okay, and Prabhuji?
60s.
Oh, okay, yeah. So now, what is the question? What is the obvious question? After hearing this discussion, what is the obvious question a devotee will have? No question.
What is the right age to join?
Huh?
What is the right age to join? Early or late?
See, that is something, okay, that question is also there, but the most important question is that, you know, after hearing all this, since we have joined late in Krishna consciousness, now, how do we plan things? And how do we... there may be some devotees who might have retired already at the age of 50s or 60s. And there may be certain devotees who are probably still not retired. So then how can they manage and retire? And they can absorb their life in Krishna consciousness. The remaining, you know, the rest of the life. So that is the obvious question. And what is the answer for that?
You have to plan.
So how will you plan? How will you plan?
So that we have to give our more percentage of time for Krishna, and other thing also should go without disturbing Krishna conscious.
Yeah, but how will you know what? How will you plan? See, it's a basic question. How can a devotee plan that they can actually, whatever time they have, maximum time they can actually spend in Krishna consciousness? Chindamani Madhuri? And Sri Kumar Prabhu, any answer?
I cannot plan at this age, but I take things as it comes.
You cannot plan at this age, and what did you say?
I take things as it comes to me.
Okay, as it comes to you. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, but yeah, that is actually not how, you know, in spiritual life things are.
I know that it's not a perfect answer, but I cannot help it.
Yeah, so here also, you know, Prabhupada says, you know, what comment you had, Prabhupada says similar thing. I think in the previous purport Prabhupada mentioned. Yeah, but, you know, the difficulty is that, yeah, that is also actually not the right track, that let things come as it is. Because the problem is that we are not knowing in what situation what one should do, how much priority one should give, right? So the obvious answer is what? Take guidance of devotees who have planned their lives or who are realized. The same thing, you know, it's the same thing. Because without that, we'll not be able to understand how to, you see, in whatever time you have now, whatever time, say it is like 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, but Krishna has given you, you know, still he has given you a chance of becoming a devotee, and you know, he has given you that freedom, you know, to a certain degree. So what the Lord will see is, you know, in spite of your age, if you are making an attempt and if you are willing to follow, you know, what the devotees say, how the devotees guide you, if you are willing to follow that, then definitely, you know, the Lord will be pleased by that act. Because, you know, he does not see just the effort, but he also sees the intention. And he also understands and considers the situation of a devotee. So any sincere devotee would want to make sure that they are in the right track, you know, at least that much. Now, whether we become pure devotees in a span of 10 years or 20 years, that's a big thing. That's a big question mark. And that is something that probably we don't want to contemplate. We don't want to think about, because we just have to give what we can at that particular time, okay? But at least at that particular circumstances and moment, if we are willing to take guidance from devotees, then that is also a good, you know, it will help us to progress in our spiritual life. So whether one will attain prema or not, or when we'll go back to Godhead or not, that's a difficult subject matter to speak about. You know, it finally depends on Guru and Krishna. But at least if you have made an attempt, you know, if you have made the attempt, then see, if you are making an attempt, you have two things coming at your door. One is that by making that attempt repeatedly, in that short amount of time. If you are sincere and if you make that attempt, if you try it, there is a chance you can go back to Godhead in a very small time frame, because Krishna is seeing your level of acceptance, okay, and willingness to actually follow someone. And second thing is, even if the Lord does not take you back to Godhead, but since you have made advancement in this life, the next life you continue from where you left off. So in next life, things becomes very easy for you. Whereas the Lord says that you take birth in a aristocratic family or in the family of Brahmanas. Or basically, you know, seeing your intention and desires, lover of the Lord in the next life. So, see, that is the advantage of putting an effort. So, but if you don't do this, then there is no guarantee. Then it's a very risky position. See, so, you know, Khatwang Maharaj, you know, as we know from Bhagavatam, he had only movement, you know, a few movements remaining, and he actually accepted those movements and he became 100%, 10% Krishna conscious. And he left his body in those few movements and he became 100% Krishna conscious. So basically that means, see, in Shastra we have all kind of examples. We have the normal examples, we have the extreme examples also. So this particular example is that of extreme one, which where, you know, in a few moments someone can become a pure devotee, which is kind of impossible, or it is, you know, it requires special mercy, right? And similarly, another case is that of Ajamil. Now he was sinning, you know, he was basically sinning even after chanting the holy name of the Lord at the state of Namavas. He was continuing to sin, but because he chanted offenselessly, his karmas got destroyed. So even future karmas. So no sin affected him. It did not have any effect on Ajamil. And then finally, you know, the Vishnudas came, as we all know. And then he was given another chance and he went back to Godhead because he became a pure devotee in that particular time frame. So now a devotee, whichever situation, whatever circumstances he has, if he just wants, you know, can make an attempt at you know, his level, then Krishna will actually appreciate that thing and he will, you know, he will bring that devotee closer to him with time. Okay, but yeah, if you don't want to make an attempt, then, you know, then very difficult to, it's difficult. So this is something that, you know, all devotees, whichever age, whatever age they have come into Krishna consciousness, they have to put an attempt, they have to make efforts, and the Lord will see the effort. So it's a safe position. Again, you know, the guidance and shelter of devotees is always the safest position. If we don't do that, we are at risk. What to speak of, you know, devotees who are coming at later ages, even the devotees who are coming at younger ages, they also will have difficulty if they are not taking proper shelter and guidance. Does this make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, so was that Sri Kumar Prabhu?
Prabhuji, I do associate with the devotees here. I do join the Satsang regularly. I do join the Yatras. And that's the reason I've joined you also.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, so that is, you have taken that step, obviously. No? So you have taken that step. And so now, so we have to, see, it is, So the problem is that, you know, spiritual life does not end at one step. There are many multiple levels of steps that one has to take, as we know. And that's the reason, you know, I was mentioning that initiation is just the beginning of spiritual life, which means that at that point of time, you have voluntarily accepted that I'm going to follow my Diksha Guru, you know, or my Gurujan. So the idea is that, as I was talking earlier, that the sadhana is there, association is there. But then the effect of sadhana association will only come into picture when we are also following devotees, you know, according to their guidance. So you know, the thing is that the consultation of devotees and taking guidance from them on important things is very important. No, I'm not saying, you know, like regularly, in the sense that you keep updating about the sadhana and, you know, so, you know, it's not like that. You know, at least for certain important things, we have to consult them. We have to Hare Krishna. Sorry, I was trying since last 5 minutes, but I was unable to connect. Finally, I got connected. Okay. Anyways, so you know, as I was saying that spiritual life has multiple steps, multiple levels, and one has to go ahead. So you know, that is the only way. You know, there is no other way. There is no shortcut in spiritual life. So. Yeah, so we have to keep trying, we have to keep making attempts, and then leave the rest to Krishna. Okay. So at, every, see, for me, you know, from my, this thing, experience. Although I have not spent so much time in KC, just probably 2007 till now, so 12 years probably. In that 12 years, I have whichever important decisions I have to take of my life, I've always consulted devotees. And obviously, not in terms of finally doing what I wanted to do, but with an open mind that, if they are giving me some negative indication about a particular thing that, I am deciding, then I don't go ahead with that situation. Okay, I don't go ahead. So, and obviously, if they are giving certain guidance, then what I've experienced and learned from them is whatever they say, they are saying with some kind of experience. And they, initially probably we might not be able to understand that. But after a few years, we'll actually realize that what they are saying is absolutely true. So that is the way, devotees actually help us to, and we also realize that we made some wrong mistakes or decisions. We took some wrong decisions. And through that experience, we can actually start, we can actually enter in a more acceptance kind of mode, rather than doing what we want to do. So this kind of attitude is actually the most important, because otherwise, there is no point of having any superior guidance and association of devotees. So basically, association of devotees also means that we associate with advanced devotees, we serve them, and they impart knowledge, because they are realized, and they will help us to destroy the ignorance and darkness that we have in our heart. That's how we progress. That is also the goal of association of devotees. So association of devotees does not only mean, generally when we associate with devotees, or especially while discussing the Shastra, so what is the conclusion of the Shastra? That is what we discuss in the association of devotees, and it is very clear what the Shastra speak, right? So similarly, whenever there is an association, so association does not mean that we just associate with about the material world and all that. Many times we get into that kind of thing where we only focus on asking, okay, how are you? How are you doing? How is the chanting going? No, it is about, basically it is about revealing one's heart, as Rupa Goswami actually says, the six symptoms of a devotee, the six things to be exchanged, for a devotee. To reveal one's heart, to let others reveal their heart to you, like especially close friends. And then prasadam, inviting devotees for prasadam, giving them prasadam, giving them Krishna Katha, taking Krishna Katha also. And at the same time, these are the six things, exchanges that a devotee is supposed to have. And so a devotee is supposed to have three kinds of association, according to Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada, what he suggested is superior association or senior devotee association, because without that there is no question of advancement. Then the association with equals, that equal association will actually deepen your Krishna consciousness. It will also make you more open-minded to hear others' views and to also understand their situation. And, that friendship bond is also, it can become very strong, which is very helpful in Krishna consciousness. And the third association is basically you give your association to the juniors. So these three associations are very important. So we have to, accordingly, we have to actually check, how much progress we are making in these areas. Anyways, it's always very safe and very helpful to always be under shelter of devotees. Okay, and take their guidance on certain critical important matters. Okay. So anyways, it's quite late now. So we'll continue next class. This recording now, in other words, the recording will not be posted in the group. So devotees, they'll have to take it from me. Okay, so all right, thank you for joining. Hare Krishna, Dandavat Pranam.
Hare Krishna, Dandavat Pranam.